right. Well, welcome. For those that came in late that haven't smelt it yet, there are party pies and drinks and that sort of thing over on the right hand side. Welcome. Welcome to the last session of the first day of Tech Ed. So thank you for coming. So it's always a long haul to get to the last session, because by the time you get to the end of today, everyone's kind of a little bit learnt out. So we'll try and make it as interesting as possible, as exciting as possible, and we'll talk about something that is going to be a complete surprise to everyone, which is virtualization, because no one's spoken about virtualization at all during Tech Ed today. I wouldn't have thought. Topic wouldn't have come up at all. Cloud, no. All right, so welcome. My name is Kyle, Kyle Rosenthal. Hi. my Twitter address is up there. I will admit now that it's generally really only active during events and that sort of thing, so I'll just put that out there now. If you want to kind of try and catch me after the session at all, I'm with part of the group that's responsible for the hands-on labs this year. So I'll be in the hands-on labs room for pretty much the rest of Tech Ed. Also, there's a meet the speakers in the next to the community lounge, which I'll be at tomorrow at around 11. So again, if you have any questions or anything like that afterwards, you want to ask anything, then please do. I am from Brisbane, so just up the road. However, if you ask my wife, she generally says that I live in a Qantas club somewhere in the world. I'm very rarely home. To give you an example, I arrived home on Monday after being home for 2.5 weeks in the UK. Was home for an hour and then drove down here to start set up for Tech Ed. So I'm hoping some point to see my wife and kids, but we'll get there eventually. All right, so what are we doing today? Deploying virtualization infrastructure from ground zero. So the sort of things that we're going to be having a look at in here is how to look at, you know, the steps that are involved in doing creating private cloud from raw resources. So essentially looking at how to do a deployment, automating that deployment as much as possible using SCVMM. So looking at certainly like, you know, the bits that are included that are involved with that. Looking at a lot of the scripts and, you know, hopefully some useful scripts that are going to be available for you to be able to automate the process as much as possible of getting, first off, virtual machines deployed as quickly as you can. But not only that, you know, like looking at, say, for instance, cluster configuration, that sort of thing as well. So we've got, I've got an environment that we can have a look at later on to actually have a look at some sort of live settings within SCVMM 2012. It's still the CTP, so it's not up to the CTP 2. It's actually the back end of the TechEd demo net. So when I'm playing around there, I'll be a little bit cautious as to what I do, because otherwise I'll have a whole bunch of presenters that'll be wondering where their virtual machines disappeared to. But yeah, certainly we'll have a look at things like resource abstraction, allocation, and subsequent usage. Part of that will be kind of looking at the things to consider when we start looking at doing private cloud implementation. And also going from, say, for instance, managing a test environment or development environment across into then a production environment. So how to kind of make sure that we're managing the resources properly within there. And also then some of the things to consider when we start putting together different services that we might be hosting, and how to then manage the resources that we might split across from within there. And that's how to... that's then how to understand and configure the resources that to actually enable you to be able to create those private clouds, and then also share some tips, tricks, scripts, etc., that might sort of assist you later on. Certainly, the slide decks will be available tomorrow to be able to download. So only the scripts and that sort of thing. You don't need to scribble them down. They'll be available for you to be able to copy out of the slides tomorrow. All right, so. Zero to cloud workflow, starting with nothing, apart from a bunch of hardware, and getting to the point where we actually have some usable resources. So to start off with, we might have generally a diverse infrastructure. So what I mean by that is that we've got, you know, say for instance, different storage in different storage areas. We've got different servers. We might have different switches that we're going through, different network connections, etc. So how do we then bring that all together into a usable sort of environment? And the first thing to do is to understand what you actually have. Okay, so that's when things like documentation come into play, particularly if you are taking, if you're putting this into an environment that already exists with or an environment with existing hardware. How to make best use of that hardware is first off to understand what hardware you actually have. So what sort of storage you have, what access you have to that storage, you know, have you got fast access, slow access, and then the servers that sit in front of it, how much memory you've got. And then by documenting that out, so that then when you start planning out how the next layer goes on, we can then make best use of it. So as I said, diverse infrastructure to start off with. And that's, you know, unless we live in a sort of, you're in a greenfields environment, that's unfortunately what we're always going to deal with. So then look at doing some assigning of either dedicated resources or shared resources. So it might be that you've got, say for instance, a dev environment that will make use of some of the resources. You've got a production environment that's going to make use of other parts of your resources. So again, planning out what you've got to start off with and then taking that to the next step. That then gives us a way to be able to logically split out the environment. So this is our next level. So we're now starting to go away from our physical environment across into a logical structure. The logical structure then becomes more abstracted. Okay. So once we get to this point, we can then start calling things as being a little bit more standardized. Now, the idea of having a standardized environment is pretty simple. By having a standardized environment, it then means that our planning from that point on becomes a little bit simpler because we now know what we've got, and we know that if we put a resource on a particular cluster, as an example, that I know exactly how much resources are going to be available to that, and therefore how much is going to be, you know, how much I can take up for memory, disk, etc. So, try to make it into a standardized environment, even though it may not be underneath. And then over the top of that, we can then layer our cloud. Okay, so the cloud abstraction then says, how am I going to give people access to it? So what sort of environment am I going to have? Now, you know, essentially what we're doing with you know, by calling it cloud abstraction, we're just simply splitting our environment into private areas where people can play around, work. Actions can be put in, so services, servers, etc. can be abstracted out with resources that are then separated from each other. So say, for instance, someone who's in the development cloud that has access to nothing in the production cloud. So we effectively start isolating them out. We then might look at doing some delegated capacity. This is, again, where we start saying, right, well, we might have within the production cloud, I might have a production cloud for my sales environment. I might have a production cloud for the engineering environment. So because they'll have different requirements, and again, I want to start being able to split those up. Okay, so this is kind of like sub-clouds, if you like. So the large clouds, smaller clouds. Cumulonimbus and... It's late in the day for jokes, isn't it? Sorry. So part of that are also going to be looking at the not only the access, but then also your administration is going to come into that as well. So with your administration, make sure that you're locking down the environment. So people who shouldn't get access, or people who need to get access to be able to do administration, to do their self-service, that sort of thing, we plan for that as part of our split. Then, of course, users being users want to actually do stuff. So therefore, we start looking at the services that we're going to provide. Now, those services, and this is kind of one of the things that's moved over the last few years from a virtual machine manager environment, is that we've gone from having virtual machines themselves to now having services that live in the cloud that may run on particular virtual machines that live in that environment. So the idea of that, as we're starting to plan out, is we start looking at what services we're going to be providing. So application services, that sort of thing. Part of that is then going to lead into, say, for instance, templates that you might create within SCVMM to be able to make, again, your life simpler later on, to be able to deploy out services or even virtual machines quickly and easily by having those templates ready to go. But again, planning that out then means that we can look at the resource allocation that we might want to put to particular environments, to particular users, to be able to function. All right, so there's a couple of ways that we can put this into play. So certainly, we can do this manually. You could get our base virtual machine set up, so doing a Hyper-V installation, just simply by going and getting the bits, putting them onto a DVD, network booting, etc., manually doing configuration. Works small scale, but once we start doing this on a much larger scale, then we want to start looking at how to automate the process as much as possible. This isn't, you know, it's not something that's brand new for virtualization. This is something that's been, you know, the goal of an IT pro forever. We want to, if we've got something that we want to repeat, then we try and script it in some way, shape, or form, make our life simple. All right, so if we're doing a bare metal Hyper-V deployment, so straight machines to start off with. First thing, we need to have a box. In this case, our virtual machine manager, in order to be able to manage it for us. So a virtual machine manager server. We need to have Wake installed. Okay, now depending on what version, what we're actually doing installation of, also depending on what version of virtual machine manager you've got, you may either need Wake or ADK. Okay, so depending on what the OS is we're actually doing the deployments for. But certainly, you know, we need to have Wake for one really key part of it. Now, there's other parts that come along with it. There's some scripts, et cetera, that we'll use. But the key part is it gives us our vanilla version of Windows PE. So if you ever do the download of the Windows Automated Installation Kit, the biggest part of that is the couple of different versions of Windows PE that come down, which are completely blank. Now, if we're doing a manual deployment, if we're planning that out, what we'd do is we'd take that, we'd mount up the Windows PE, we'd then inject scripts into it, and then we'd lock it back down again and put that out onto either WDS server or we'd put it onto a thumb drive, et cetera, to be able to do our deployments from. It's the same sort of theory that we're going to do within a Hyper-V environment, to be also a virtual machine leveraging off this, but when instead of using our manual process, we're going to do this all within the sort of virtual environment to start off with. So we need to have a WDS server somewhere. So WDS server, and the example we've got in here is a 2008 R2 or an R2 SP1. For those that have seen any of my deployment talks before, you'll know that my recommendation for doing any WDS is a minimum of an R2 SP1 because there's fixes some of the issues that have previously lived within WDS for doing doing deployments. It works, but once you start scaling, which we may be doing within here, then you know, we're going to need something else to be able to, we're going to need a more reliable version. So what we do is we just simply install it. We don't have to really do anything else because the process that we're going to follow within Virtual Machine Manager does the rest of it for us. So it's WDS clean install. We need to have a DHCP server. Well, if we're going to be using WDS, we've got to have a DHCP server to be able to first off get an address from, DNS server, etc. So we need to have the infrastructure put in place. In Virtual Machine Manager, we then need to tell Virtual Machine Manager that the WDS server exists. So it's add the server, add server, and it's just add resources of a Pixie server because that's what we're relying on it to be able to use. Virtual Machine Manager then reaches out and installs the Virtual Machine Manager agent over onto the WDS server. So at this point, we have control to be able to make access and use it to be able to leverage off of images, etc. And the way that you know, if you're looking on the WDS server, if you're looking to see if this machine has been made part of a Virtual Machine Manager deployment, you know, say for instance you're coming to an environment that someone's already in, or that someone's already done some work in, then have a look for that DCMGR folder. Okay, so it lives under the remote install folder. That remote installs folder, the example I've got there is D drive, but you know, wherever you've placed the remote installs folder, so you know, depend on where you've actually set it up in the WDS setup. We then push out the Windows PE image, and as part of that, we actually inject drivers to be able to do our basic level of deployment. So what that does then, it then means that the WDS server is now holding an image, which is a reasonably clean Windows PE image. That reasonably clean Windows PE image, though, is now knowledgeable of Virtual Machine Manager and has the certificate that then means we can actually connect across to the Virtual Machine Manager to be able to pull images, in this case, bare metal deployments down. So what sort of things can we put in? So there is, like I said, it's Windows PE. It's vanilla Windows PE to start off with. What we're going to do is we're going to inject into it some Windows PE customization potentially. So this is some examples that are in here. Essentially, it's a bunch of PowerShell scripts that we can use to be able to do things like mount the WIM. We have to first off determine where the WIM file is. We also then can use this to be able to inject additional drivers that we might need to put into place, additional directories, and then making sure that we actually use DISM then to be able to, or leveraging off DISM to be able to do our injection, or sorry, mounting first off of the Windows PE file, and then being able to do some injection of drivers. Okay. So depending on how diverse your hardware is you're doing your deployment to will depend on how many drivers you're actually going to put into place. Now, try not to, the one theory is that you get every single driver known to mankind and put that into your image. Yes, that will work, but it's not the most efficient way to be able to do it. So instead, look at go back to your documentation you made of what your physical hardware looks like, so that you actually know what's in there, you know what drivers you're going to be requiring, and therefore that's then going to make it more efficient to be able to do your deployments to start off with. So it's one of those things that we need to make sure we think ahead with regards to our deployment to make sure that it works as smoothly as possible. One of the key things that we're going to be doing within a bare metal deployment, because we're automating this, we want it to be able to run in the background potentially. So for instance, we tie this in with something like Service Manager. Service Manager, and we've got an Operations Manager. Operations Manager says, I'm running out of resources on a particular cloud or a particular server. Then automate the deployment, creates an alert, sends it across to Service Manager. Service Manager says, hey, we need to do a deployment. Deployment that then goes across to Virtual Machine Manager, triggers off the action to be able to do it. So we want the entire process to be as smooth as possible, and in order to be able to plan ahead for that, to make sure that occurs, is certainly by making sure that our images are as clean as they possibly can be for the next step. Right? So looking at this, we've got drivers being injected, the drivers in. We've also then got the DISM script to be able to unmount and commit the changes, and then essentially do our cleanup after we've done a publish of our image. So the publish of the image effectively republishes the image out to our WDS server. But again, rather than doing this in a manual process, we can actually script this to be able to do it for us. So that then when we start looking at deploy out to this bare metal, I can then look at the drivers that are on there as an example and then inject them, as I said, automated. Okay, so deployment in action. So the next part of this, we've got our WDS server, we've got our DHCP server, we've got our Virtual Machine Manager server. We can then call across to the bare metal server using an out-of-band reboot. Now, this will depend on the server that we've got. It also depends on the configuration you've got within Virtual Machine Manager. And at this point, I might just jump across onto a server just to show you exactly what I'm meaning. So when you start adding looking at adding servers in, that's a thing, adding resources, getting them configured up, what you need to make sure you've got or you're aware of is the not really where I'm looking for. As I said, I got off a plane on Monday morning, so brain goes a little bit funny at times. So in particular, what you're looking for, and as I said, it's the out-of-band settings that we're looking at, but what you want to look at doing, if the configuration actually comes in the heading of the BMC settings, and it's the bare metal configuration settings. Part of what's in here is knowing what your bare metal servers are going to look like so that you can then know what the actual management interface is. There's a couple of different versions that we've got from within there. And I won't actually commit these changes, but in there, you've got the Intelligent Platform Management Interface, or IPMI, or SMASH. Now, if you're not sure, then more than likely the ability to be able to reach out. So effectively what we're doing is we're reaching out across the network to the BIOS level to be able to do the BIOS level management. Then more than likely, it's using the IPMI. So say, for instance, the HP, Dell, most of the sort of the major servers that you're going to be able to manage will be using that style of management. Okay. So if in doubt, if you're not sure and you're doing a configuration, first off, check, But then, if you still can't determine, then try using the intelligent platform management interface. Of course, when we do that, you then need to start doing things like the run as accounts, etc. So make sure you've got an account that has access to be able to log on to the local machine, so that'll be configured locally. And again, you know, planning ahead with your documentation within there. And this is where sort of like your diverse settings for your configuration, your documentation of those potentially diverse settings comes in, because then when you start actually doing your setup and your configuration, you then know exactly what to plug in, so what the local accounts might be, etc. Bearing in mind that doing that whole reach out thing across the network does require the permissions along with it. Where we were. So therefore, it's potentially something that someone else might be able to use to be able to do something with your machines, particularly reboot, key Hyper-V servers that you're going to be sending into clusters and that sort of thing. So therefore, be really cautious with making sure that you've actually reset passwords from whatever the default settings are, because otherwise you're sort of opening yourself up to attacks you don't necessarily want. No one wants attacks, so that's pretty good. All right, so as I said, we reach out, we do that out-of-band reboot, so reaching out to the BIOS level, trigger off a reboot, and then going to Pixie. So once we boot from Pixie, this is where the WDS server comes in for us. It then gives us our Pixie answer, at which point we then pass it across to the virtual machine manager to be able to authorize as to whether we can actually allow the Pixie boot to come through. That gets allowed, in which case we then can download the customized Windows PE. Customized Windows PE, which is going to have all of our all of our drivers to be able to connect across. And again, if you're looking at doing your deployments, you're going to be deploying across the network. The first thing you need to make sure you inject into any of your customized Windows PE environments is a network driver. You know, and make sure that you get that right. So, you know, like I said before, don't include 4,000 different drivers. If you want to make sure that you're getting your network right and you're not sure what network cards you're going to have, that's when you might sort of go a little bit lazy with regards to how many drivers you put in, because you want to have that basic level to be able to connect through. The other thing with that is to make sure that you actually have the correct driver for, you know, like say, for instance, whatever chipset is actually on the network cards you're connecting across to, because it can make a huge difference for the actual deployment speed when we start doing our deployments. All right, so then what we do is we then do the generic command execution, or the GCE scripts. Now, effectively what this does is this goes onto the local box and runs some of the local prep that we want to do on the machine. So what sort of things might we need to prep on a machine? Well, if it's a server, then it might be looking at things like not just simply doing a disk part to be able to create a partition. We might start having to make sure we've got included in there things like setting up RAID settings. So, and I've got an example of a script that we might use to be able to do some of these for the GCEs. But it's sort of the thing that we need to look at for the particular servers that we're going on to. And again, making sure you customize it for the servers and have it as generically customized as possible, so that therefore maybe it does a detection of what the actual hardware is and then runs the correct script to be able to do the as I said, RAID configuration, network configuration, that sort of thing. Then we download the VHD. Now it's a VHD that we're installing. It's not a WIM file we pull down at this point. It's a VHD. So effectively what we're doing is we're setting up our machines to be able to do a native boot to VHD. So effectively what we're doing is pulling down a VHD. The VHD, just one of those things for your VHD, we have to have had that prepped already at some point. So therefore we have to have effectively a sysprepped image to be able to pull down. There is, with sysprep, now there's a new switch just that might come in handy within there, which is actually to be able to, especially for a generalize. So rather than just doing a straight generalize, which we could do of a VHD file within the OS, you know, we'd load it up, sysprep slash generalize slash out-of-box experience, but also make sure you tack onto that the end of it to slash prepare colon VHD. And what that does is then means that once it starts up the full, like the out-of-box experience, which does all the you know, naturally the hardware detection, that sort of thing, it actually cuts out the majority of it. Because from a Boot to VHD environment, we don't necessarily need to get all of the local hardware, because what are we doing? We're operating through the hypervisor. So as long as we can get to the hypervisor level, we don't need to go too far down. So therefore, a lot of the part of doing our of a full out-of-box experience, you know, that we'd get trigger off with a standard sysprep, we don't need when we start actually doing a boot to VHD. And it will cut down the amount of time that it will actually take to start your virtual machine from the time you deploy it to the time it actually starts. I'm not going to give you a complete figure, but it'll, you know, it cuts it down by a significant amount. So download the VHD. At that point, depending on what we've got set on the virtual machine manager for the template that we're putting across onto here. So therefore, you know, we might have that it's a, or we've set it up so the template says it's a Windows Server 2008 R2 box. It's going to be living on a HP random model, and on that random model we need these drivers. So rather than, again, having those all piled into the actual VHD file, we can do a point of deployment injection of those drivers. And then, in addition to that, we might also use the host profile. The host profile then looks at, say, for instance, things like the the what sort of configuration we're going to have onto it. So what resources we want to have, what services we actually want to enable on the box. Customize and domain join. So in this case, we're joining across onto the Contoso the domain. Install the virtual machine manager agent. Now the reason we do that is because now we actually have, or now that we do, well, the reason we do at this point, we've actually got a deployed box. It's now authenticated into the domain. As part of being authenticated into the domain, I can now take full control of it using Virtual Machine Manager. So therefore, at this point, I grab out my agent. The agent, once it's in place, I can then start using that to be able to do the reboots, etc., within the virtual machine itself. So now what I have is I've got a whole bunch of virtual machines that I've been able to deploy out, host machines that I've been able to deploy out basically onto the metal. So part of what I can do within Virtual Machine Manager then is I then gather that into a host group. Then I can do either management at the local level for the particular virtual machine host, or alternatively into the host group. So do assign a host group into a cloud, that sort of thing. All right. We then can run scripts post-installation. So again, part of the specialization, depending on what the host group is, depending on what the resources are going to be applied, depending on what local files we want to have available on those boxes. Once we've got to the point where we can then have our environment up and running, this might also look at things like, say, for instance, NIC teaming to put into place, because I've now got control of the box to be able to set those sort of things up. So at that point, I've got a deployed Hyper-V host, which is known to a virtual machine manager. And because it's now known to Virtual Machine Manager, I can now start looking at deploying virtual machines onto there, or moving virtual machines from one host across to another host. And again, if we're looking at this, you know, sort of in a whole sort of system-centered solution environment, at the point of time that I've got a Hyper-V server available, I can then have Operations Manager talking across through Service Manager, talking across into Virtual Machine Manager to say, hey, look, we need to start load balancing some of the virtual machines out, and have them then do live migrations across onto the box that I've just stood up. And that's the beauty of sort of the family of the system center tools, is they all do talk to each other in some way, shape, or form. So therefore, we can then make sure that they, because they know each other, we can then send them commands from one to another. All right, so rewinding back a little bit. So doing those the configuration scripts during the actual deployment, so actually getting that step set up. So why do we do it? As I said, it's for that base level stuff that we need to do before we actually lay down a VHD. So we can do things like, say, for instance, the firmware updates, that sort of thing within there. It's also configuring, you know, the local resources, so the local disks, and as I mentioned before, things like the RAID configuration. Things to make sure that we're aware of from within there. I've got a sample in the script within here for some RAID configuration. Don't take that as being the one that will work on every single configuration that you have. Instead, you need to go and consult the vendor for your particular environment to make sure that you're actually using the right environment for that. Okay, so that's my little addendum, that if you do copy and paste and it breaks your environment, not my fault. So you should have done your research. So there you go. I'm now covered. So find the exact command. Make sure that, for instance, when we're doing this as well, when we're doing our deployments out, it's one of those things. Test before you go completely wild, and also test, also limit, say, for instance, where the reach of your scripts and that sort of thing are going to go. Speaking from experience, I've had environments before where people have run scripts in production that should have really been run in test first, and then had production environment fall over, and people wondered why. So make sure you do your testing, right? So make sure that even if, say, for instance, you've got an environment you've got set up, you've got your scripts ready, you know exactly how they're going to work. When you get a new server in, even if it's a year down the track, if it's the same model number, it looks and feels the same, do the test before you start automating it completely. Okay? Because the bits inside may not necessarily be the same as what the as what it was to start off with. So therefore, as I said, make sure you do some testing from there. All the other alternative is to go the opposite way within your scripts and make everything as generic as possible, but then it means that you're going to pay for performance later on, or potentially anyway. So a script example. So, and again, generic as possible from within here. We've got a RAID configuration of deleting. So, for instance, in here, it's using the del command line. So, using a del command line to be able to delete an existing RAID configuration. And then create a new set of environments. Okay, now again, it's a sample. Use it, research, etc., before you start deploying this out. But this is some examples of the sort of thing that we're going to do from within here. And again, bear in mind that where this is running from is within our Windows PE environment that we've put down. So these are the scripts that we're going to inject into that custom Windows PE environment to be able to deploy out. So making sure that the example we've got in here, the first one, I said deleting the existing VHD, or sorry, virtual disk, and then the RAID configuration, and then creating a new one. So again, depending on what it looks like to start off with. And it might be that the vendor has provided you with a new server, has got it so it looks and feels great, etc., but you want to go clobber it and start again, and that's where we might look at getting rid of what's actually configured on there. And I would probably encourage you to do that in most circumstances anyway, because not that I don't trust vendors for the hardware they supply, but I like to have my own environment and know exactly what's in it as opposed to trusting what's being stood up by someone else. Okay, so during doing a custom resource, and again, within here, we're looking at getting the profiles. Remember that profile we mentioned on the virtual machine manager? We can reach out from within there, work out what the profile of this particular piece of hardware is, and then with some of the settings for our script commands that are on there. And again, it will depend on what we're wanting to achieve and what your server looks like. But in this example, what we're doing is we're reaching out across to a remote resource to be able to create, in this case, a library resource to be able to get access to. Okay. And again, configured for your own sort of environment. But as I said, these are sort of samples to be able to work from, and again, available on the slides for you to be able to see. But It's kind of one of those things that it's a double-edged sword. It is a really powerful way to be able to do configuration quickly and easily, but you also conversely want to make sure that you can, you don't want to destroy everything unless you actually intend to destroy everything. So there might be, if we've got a bare metal box, then it's bare metal, no loss if you wipe everything out to start off with. But if it's a production box that you're now migrating across into Virtual Machine Manager and you want to start again, make sure you're targeting the right production box to be able to do this too. So, post-deployment scripts. So as I said, things like, say, for instance, doing nick teaming were put into here. because we need to have the actual OS applied out to be able to do our the configuration. Any iSCSI configuration, again, that we want to put into the actual hardware or into the OS itself, again, we need to do it as post. So there are some of these things that we might be able to do as scripts. You know, say for instance, you know, a script within the configuration, or sorry, within group policy, or you know, other sort of methodologies. But the idea of doing this before we stand the box up is because when we stand the machine, like as we're standing the machine up, as we're doing as part of the install, then it means that by the time it actually gets onto our network, available with a resource that we can then start looking at and start working with, it's already configured without having to go through multiple group policy reboots, et cetera, to be able to have all of your scripts applied. And again, plan this out. You know? So make sure that you take advantage of, you know, say for instance, if we're deploying out a Windows 2012 box, make sure that we take advantage of the new NIC teaming sort of advantages within there. Depending on what your connection is to storage, again, will depend on how the you know, how the setup actually goes to be able to mount up remote drives, mount up connections to the network storage, etc. All right, so how do we actually get this to work? Well, first off, you need to actually find out the exact command to run. That's kind of the same thing for any batch files, I guess, or any scripts that we're going to run. Test it to make sure that it's going to work, that it's going to do what you need to do. Use the VMM commandlet, which is in this case the invoke script command, and that then we can then use to pass the particular command. So again, a couple of examples from within there, where we've got we're running a command line, the last one that's on there. So to be able to do an NSH interface IP setup, putting on you know, a static IP address onto a machine. So that's the kind of thing we can do. So anything you can do from a command line, anything that you can run as part of a batch file script, etc. Now, we can call as part of that post deployment script. Okay. All right. So cluster creation. At the point of when we're actually looking at doing clusters, you know, so it's sort of it goes hand in hand to an extent. But things that we need to look at from within here is we need to look at assigning storage out to the clusters. So you know, and we're assuming within here or I'm assuming within here, because we're at a Microsoft conference, we're talking about sort of the Microsoft clustering sort of environment within here. But if you're doing something else, still need to look at the idea of where your cluster lives, what the cluster is going to be doing, how much storage is available, how we're going to get access to it, and then how we assign permissions to it, etc. Okay, so that part of all the planning you need to put into place before we get to that point. So, do your cluster creation. Now, we can, if we're using the Windows environment or Windows clustering, we can automate that. Okay, so, therefore, we can create that. But again, like we're going to be using probably our clusters over and over again for other resources. So, make sure we get that right. So, there's PowerShell scripts that we can use to be able to do that, to be able to assign the storage into the cluster, but then also then create the cluster as well. Okay, so, again, using Windows clustering for that sort of environment is what we're looking at. So what have we done so far? What we've looked at doing is effectively the bottom part of this. Okay, so the bottom part of our original slide deck where we said, look, we've got our diverse infrastructure which splits out, we don't know what the hardware is, or we've got different bits of hardware, we've got different bits of networks, we've got different bits of storage, etc. We've now brought that into a logical and standardized environment. And how have we done that? By deploying out onto the multiple machines, creating our Hyper-V servers, which are now sitting within our environments within Virtual Machine Manager. Because they're now within Virtual Machine Manager, we see them as a resource that we can now leverage off. Okay, so that resource, we don't really care to an extent what the actual servers underneath are capable of, etc., because we see it as a resource that I can assign from within SCVMM. All right, so the next step then is to lay on top of that the clouds. And this is where we go within SCVMM to actually now go from having the resources that are available and allocating them out to our bunches of you know, the private clouds that we're going to be putting into place. And within here, really, like sort of we are talking, although we might leverage access this from other places, we're really looking at this being our private cloud environment that we're now starting to put into place. Okay, so effectively gathering the resources together and then saying, this cloud has access to this sort of resources. At which point, we're then further abstracting the actual underlying hardware to just simply being a set of resources we can actually take actions on. So then we need to look at, as I said before, like delegated capacity, so who has control of it, who has access to it, what users we have for, say, for instance, the self-service users, etc., and then the services that lay on top of that. So let's have a look further into that then. So creating the resources for our cloud consumption. So the logical steps that we need to make sure that you follow, so planning out and then putting into place, things like creating the clouds. Now, creating a cloud within SCVMM is just really creating a, like the example, like sort of, you know, want of a better example, if you look back to, say, for instance, your group management within, say, for instance, an Active Directory environment. Totally diverse from what, you know, the cloud sort of environment is. But what do we use that for? What do we do that for? We do that so that we can do management in one single place for, say, for instance, the group of users. And that's essentially why we want to start looking at doing our clouds, is because we want to be able to have resources that are allocated once into a cloud and managed once in that cloud, separated from the other parts of the environment. So we need to create the clouds, and again, planning out from there. Like, so we've got the basic sort of ones that you might have, your infrastructure, or so production environment, and your development environment or test environment. Same underlying resources, just shared out differently, or different portions of it assigned out to the clouds. Create the user roles. So how are we going to give people access, or give those users access into the resources? Attach any of the virtual or logical networks that we want to put into place. And again, think about this. Based off what sort of resources we're going to be pumping through, and also what underlying sort of infrastructure we have to be able to attach onto it. We'll sort of talk about that some more shortly. Allocate the capacity out. How much does each one of our clouds want to be able to have of our overarching resources? And again, by putting this into some sort of, you know, planning environment to start off with, we then should know what we're going to be hopefully using the environment for, and then based off that, look at how much resources we want to be able to allocate out for services, applications, servers that we're going to put into place, etc. Assign a template, so a service template. Also potentially look at assigning the virtual machine templates so that we can then allocate those out for the actual virtual machines to be able to create those later on. But certainly from a service template area, saying, right, if I'm wanting to send up an Exchange box, then Exchange will need this. This is the hardware it needs. This is the software it needs, etc., to be able to put out to place. This is the virtual machine that I need to put into place. Assign a self-service user. So therefore being able to, again, abstract from the day-to-day management of our environment to the end user to be able to do some of their own management. And then finally do the deployment of the service to be able to get it up and running to start off with. So whatever it is that we're wanting to put into our cloud. Okay, so I was actually trying to hide these before. They're available for you to be able to look at sort of like just some of the screenshots, etc. But what I wanted to get to was here. So, placement. So the placement, say for instance, of our actual hosts, where they are, allocating out VLANs to them, tying out those VLANs across onto either to the network resources, whether something's going to be a front-end resource or a back-end resource, then what might define as to where we're actually how we're going to put out our logical and virtual networks to be able to attach onto there. So, as an example, within here we've got four different IP address ranges that we've got put into place. We've got those split across two different VLANs. We've also then got assigned to that multiple virtual machines. And again, getting to that whole thing of abstracting from the actual host boxes themselves, from a user perspective, they don't care. They don't care where they necessarily live. What they care about is the access into it. So, first off, when we start doing our load balancing and our planning within here, pick whatever the VLAN is that we're going to assign to an environment. If we don't have to, depending on what we're doing our VLANing for, of course. But make sure that we do some of the load balancing to make sure that we use the one that's being used the least effectively to be able to put into here. Check to make sure that the IP addressing that you've got. If you're assigning pools across onto the onto a network, make sure that the IP address actually the pool has enough to be able to support whatever the servers are that you're putting into it, whatever the resources are you're wanting to allocate. And then finally, there, place the VMs within the service that connect to the same logical network. So if you've got services that are being shared, or virtual machines that are sharing services, don't put them across onto different VLANs. And again, making sure that we've then got, because otherwise if we do that, we're just putting ourselves in for more network traffic than we actually require. So therefore, try and simplify our own layout for performance later on. Again, so network management. So things to look at, again, things like, say, for instance, logical networks. So classify the network for the virtual machines to access. So therefore, when we're doing a setup, we're going to be, say, for instance, allocating across onto a service. We're going to put the networks from physical boxes to virtual machines. Make sure that we actually layer across onto that the correct or the best sort of environment for our networks to be able to go across. Map that as much as possible to the physical network topology. And again, try to simplify your network for, first off, your planning purpose, for your implementation purpose, and more importantly, later on, for your support purpose. One of the things that I'll also encourage you to do within any of this is document it, document it, and document it. Okay? And again, maybe not for you to be able to remember tomorrow when you come in, but I guarantee you in 6 months' time, if you've done something really tricky with your configuration, and you look at it in 6 months' time and you go, why did I set the configuration up like that? Well, he's got that split across in the two VLANs. I'm sure it was a really logical thing to do and it was really smart to do it at the time. When you get to that point down the track, you won't remember what it is. Okay. Or, worst case scenario, and not necessarily for you, but for the next person, if you do something with your network configuration that is complex, just for the sake of being complex, and again, it looked really logical at the time, next person that comes along may not understand what the heck it is that you've done, and therefore makes their job a heck of a lot harder to be able to do their support or maintenance of the environment you put into place. And again, you may not really care because you might have moved on, but if you're that next person that's coming through, then you're going to hope that the person before you has done some documentation. But yeah, so certainly then start allocating out the logical networks across into the host or clouds so that they're then being resources we can then start leveraging off. For your address pools, and again, make sure that we've actually got some plan with regards to our network configuration for the addressing. Make sure that we're not doing conflicts across into DHCP environment, for dynamically assigned IP addresses, if we've got our own IP address set that we're assigning out to a range of virtual machines that we're going to be deploying to. So again, planning out so that we're not going to cause us problems later on. Create potentially a MAC address pool. And again, within here, making sure that we're planning to be able to use the virtual machine MAC address pool as opposed to, say, for instance, something that might travel across into the physical MAC address pool. Load balances. Yeah, if we're putting load balances onto our networks, make sure that we've got allocation for that. Also, make sure that we've got some way to be able to control those. And hopefully it might be through something like PowerShell to be able to then do dynamic load balance of the network we're talking about at this level. So service placement. And again, this takes a little bit of planning with regards to the services that your virtual machines are going to be providing. And so when we're starting to look at our templates, looking at, say, for instance, the front-end tier VMs, the mid-tier VMs, or things like the back-end databases, that sort of thing. So you're going to have some resources which are going to go across from logically being front-end services to being a back-end service. So again, making sure that we actually allocate resources properly across between those. But say, for instance, for our front-end, and again, looking at abstracting at this, and you notice we've moved from New York across to Brisbane now because it's a local resource. Local-ish. All right, again, it's getting late, I know. So we've got, say, for instance, our VMs that we're putting out. And again, looking at where our resources are going to be putting in for, say, for instance, the host that we're going to go across. And so therefore starting to allocate out, so for instance, one of our front-end VMs, effectively what happens is we try to attach it onto, it's going onto a host. That host then has to have some logical connections into either the back-end network or the front-end network. And again, like if we're doing this, if we don't do this correctly, say for instance, we've got a host that doesn't have a connection to one of our say for instance, to the front-end server or to the front-end network, then we're going to run ourselves into trouble. So say for instance, the last one, the one at the bottom there, the host 6, the DB tier virtual machines, if we go back a little bit, we said they're all back-end servers, so therefore we want to have those as back-end resources, so therefore if we've got a back-end logical network, we want to be able to connect it to that. It's not a front-end service. Okay, but it does then mean that, so for instance, something like our middle-tier virtual machines, when we start deploying that as onto host, we want to make sure that they're deploying it onto a host that has, in this case, both a front-end and a back-end, so therefore we wouldn't be able to have that logically, well, we wouldn't logically be able to deploy that out onto, say, for instance, host 6 that only has the corp rather than a front-end environment. So essentially what we do to be able to sit in front of this is we use the vSwitches. Let's make sure it's connected to the right network. And then effectively it funnels through for us. So front-end host. So the front-end tier VMs go across through host 1. Going to the virtual switch, then going out to the front-end network. Okay? And then, as I said before, logically we want to make sure that our hosts are configured correctly for the services that we're going to put onto them. All right, what about our storage that we're going to put into place? So again, looking at things like capacity management. We can add storage onto a host. We can add virtual storage, physical storage onto a host, but we need to make sure that we've planned for that process to be able to put into place. And hopefully, like sort of, we've planned ahead enough with regards to our capacity planning that we then don't need to necessarily take hosts down to be able to have that put into place. Doing things like, say, for instance, clusters. With a clustering service, we might be able to add in additional storage quite simply, quite easily. For those that have been into any of the storage solution presentations, doing things like, say, for instance, storage pools, that sort of thing might also be of assistance within here, where we can dynamically add in extra resources into an environment. But certainly make sure that we've planned ahead for that. You know, it's one of those things. Storage is always an infinite resource for people to be able to want, but it's a finite resource for us to be able to present. So therefore, we can only plan ahead so much with regards to how much storage we're going to need. I think you think back to a couple of years ago when people, you know, a few years ago, my folks, their first machine that they bought for a business had 10 meg of storage on it. That was going to be plenty. From memory, the drive was about this big. You could probably, you know, used it to be able to build houses with if you could have afforded the $700 or $800 it cost for that 10 meg of storage. So, to be able to build your house out of. But the idea is, like, sort of like, again, as we've moved on, we start scaling out how much resources we require. And you know, looking at sort of planning ahead as much as you possibly can, looking at, say, for instance, the storage that we use for the hands-on labs, we've grown from having all of our virtual machines being able to fit on a 500 gig drive to being able to fit and then on 1 terabyte drive, to the multiple racks of storage that you now see sitting in the hands-on lab environment. And that's over the last 7 years. So as we start planning out more and more process with regards to your future and the future amount of storage, as I said, you know, plan for the fact that you're not actually planning accurately because it's potentially going to exponentially grow anyway. So make sure that you know how to be able to, or you've got the resources and the ability to be able to add that later on if need be. Okay, so when we do our storage, though, what we can do, if we're doing it within a virtual machine environment and within the virtual machine manager, I can fairly much dynamically later on add storage as I need to into virtual machines. The only trick is how I actually do that, okay? So therefore, how the mapping is, so therefore, how I start actually to be able to deploy out new storage and add it on with as little to no downtime as much as possible with regards to the actual services that I'm providing. Particularly one of those things to bear in mind, and it's sort of like the downtime of virtual machines is one of those things that we do need to consider for the simple reason that as we go into more into a virtualization environment, we're relying more and more on the virtual world. And again, users don't care if it's virtualized or not. What they care about is they care about the fact that stuff works. So if we say, look, we've got to take it down because it's a virtual machine, I need to add storage to it and I can't just simply plug in a physical drive, they go, well, why are we virtualizing? You say, well, overall it saved us X amount of money, and they go, we don't care. That service with that resources that are required, it doesn't work anymore. So again, plan for that sort of in that environment. And you've probably noticed that we've now got a virtual machine Manig. That's a little icon sort of moved across into there a little bit too far. So virtual machine manager, they're just be assured it's not a new product. So we've got, say for instance, the discovery for some storage management environments. And again, they could be storage that some more reliable storage, less reliable storage, etc. Better, more expensive storage, less expensive storage, faster storage, slower storage, that we then add into the virtual machine manager environment. And once we've got them in, we can then start allocating the resources out into the various different host group to be able to use. So effectively, then that's going to bubble up into our cloud environment for those host groups to be able to access. We can also assign things like the existing LUNs into hosts and clusters, or go ahead and create some new LUNs using some from the pool and then assign those across into the hosts or also into some virtual clusters that we might have. All right, so a couple of things just to sort of, and we'll get to a Q&A sort of thing shortly, but just if you are interested in sort of looking further into some of the environments within virtual machine manager, et cetera, so virtual machine manager, also Hyper-V management, et cetera. So first off, there's some presentations, breakout sessions, that's what I was trying to think of. The SIM 331 migrating virtual environments to Hyper-V. So if you're looking to go from other virtualization environments across into Hyper-V, basic level is what we're looking at from within here. System Center Components, the Infrastructure and Components Manager for virtualization, and again looking at sort of some of the virtualization management components within there. A couple of breakout sessions. All the breakout sessions are recorded, so say for instance if you've got something that conflicts, you'll be able to listen to it, download it later on. There is also available in the labs next door, and some people might have come to this one today, but it actually is on tomorrow. There was a bit of a snafu in some of the printouts. There's actually a Getting Started with System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager. So if you haven't touched the product before, you can go in. There's an instructor-led lab on there. There's also a hands-on lab that's available. And also, as I mentioned earlier, I will be available tomorrow if you do want to come and ask questions or have a chat about various different things. I've got the speaker room there. It's actually in the speaker lounge area, which is next to the community lounge in the expo hall. Right. Having said that, we're just going to have a brief, quick look into not there. There we go. Into our virtual machine manager, just to kind of have a look at some of the components that we're looking at within there. So what we're talking about from within here is, say for instance, we've got set up in here a library, we've got some, for instance, custom answer files that are set up for deploying out some virtual machines. We've got some virtual hard drives that we've got also within there. But some custom resources, now the custom resources will be dependent on whatever the template is that we might want to put into place to be able to deploy out. And also then a deployment ISO image for the 2012 data center. Let's just have a quick look, see what clouds we've actually got set up within here. We've got the local AU TechEd cloud, which again, I can't dive too deeply into here. As I said, it's not actually mine to be able to play around with. Let's have a look at some of the profiles templates that we've got set up. Is there any that we've got in? Yep. So we've got, say for instance, the basic ones in there, so Hyper-V Server, Zen Server ESX, depending on what we're deploying out to, will depend on what the profile that we might put into place. And again, it will depend then on what template we're going to put into what template we're going to use, what resources we're going to use. The hardware profiles, none set up at the moment, but this is where, say, for instance, when we go to do our virtual machine deployment, we say, right, this is the hardware we want to be able to deploy onto, this is the operating system we want to put into place, etc. Answer files we can plug in at that point as well. And the important part for us is the actual fabric that sits behind it. So we've got, say, for instance, the host boxes. We might have some Pixie boxes, which we don't in this environment. And then our networks, both the logical network switches and the MAC address pools that we might put into place. And again, not a lot of modifications have been put into here. And then the storage that we've got to put in as well. So the storage pools, et cetera, that we might put into play. Okay, so, again, I don't want to play around too much into here because I don't want to kill off an environment for someone else. All right, so, as I said, the idea was to kind of give you a heads up of some of the ways to be able to do some of your deployments, automate the bare metal deployments. Make sure you make use of the scripts, there's some default scripts that are available as part of that, the general configuration scripts. Also, make sure that you do customize those to be able to set for your own environment. So make sure, and you don't necessarily have to make it work, but what you do is you can do your customization to make sure that it works better. Okay. So again, as we start moving from more physical environments to more virtual environments that are hosted on physical environments, we want to make sure that those physical boxes are working as well as possible in order to be able to make the virtual machines work as better as possible as well. Okay, so we've got a couple of minutes left. If we've got any questions at all. Yep.
In terms of the WDS, how, say, if we have a SCCM environment in place with a Pixie service point servicing that VLAN,
yep.
Is there a way we can prevent that from, the bare metal machine to be pulled up from the Pixie service point?
So the question is that if we've got an existing SCCM environment, which we already have a Pixie service point involved. How do we, is there a way to be able to make sure that we prevent the bare metal boxes from being serviced by that existing Pixie environment? It becomes a challenge because if we've got multiple Pixie environments, that's a dead set challenge to start off with. What we can use is we can still leverage off the existing Pixie server, the WDS server that we're leveraging off to get to the Pixie service point. Because when you're doing your config manager, you actually install WDS, but you do no configuration on it. You leverage off that, and effectively all the WDS does is it says, it then enables you to be able to Pixie, gets Pixie authorized by, in that case, the config manager environment. What we need to make sure that we're still leveraging off the same WDS server. The difference will be that when we do our Pixie, the Pixie service, the authorization won't be able to come from our config manager environment because it won't know about the box that we're trying to do a deployments from.
We can use the same WDS server for VMM.
Yep, because all we're doing is managing it from, we've got the virtual machine manager and the agent installed in it to then do the management of it. You can do the Pixie response to delay on the. Now you're doing that on the config manager and also onto the onto the virtual machine manager side of it from the service, the Pixie service. Yep.
What can you do in there to make, say, pod more important than dev? So you've got blade chassis and you want to make dev
slower. So the question is, how can you make you've got the same set of resources, you've got a production environment and a dev environment. How do you make it so that the production environment has more priority over and above your dev environment? The answer is you're actually doing the same resources out. What you're doing is you're looking at then how your resources are being used. So therefore, you can't physically deprecate one of the environments. But what you can do is allocate less resources to it. But the priority itself is not going to be handled at that level, it's going to be depending on what the services are you're putting on. the by having less resources being assigned, say for instance to dev than your prod, even though they're the same resources, it'll get like it won't be able to eat up as much as what your prod environment is. So fair question. Like, if we're doing like, so why would you do all the host profile, etc.? If you've already got Config Manager, why not just leverage off Config Manager? Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Like, just make sure that you got your scripts that you're running as part of your for your task sequence is actually using like running the GCE scripts to be able to do the local configuration, because at that point, Virtual Machine Manager is what we need to be able to control over the top of it. The other thing that you might find is that challenge is the actual set of when you kick off your task sequence, you're going to have to be able to let Virtual Machine Manager know that you've got an incoming virtual machine, like a host box, to be able to come onto it. So therefore, it then takes over the profiles of the specialized configuration. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, yep, at the back. Sorry, the... Sorry, I can you, if you can say it a little bit louder? Right, so for the lab environment, without going too deeply into it, we actually don't use this to like this at all. we've got we've got a custom environment that we use for the road cases that we take out, effectively, because everything lives for a very short amount of time. Certainly, we have the management tools, etc., for our data center. And in the data center, we certainly use the Virtual Machine Manager to be able to dynamically allocate out new resources, etc. What lives in the lab room is the boxes themselves, like say for instance the desktop boxes, just simple OS as light as possible with our custom app that lives on it. They connect across then into essentially a clustered Hyper-V environment. So with a tool that lives across the top of it. So it's a custom environment that we've got set up for that sort of specialized environment. So. Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, the question is like sort of can we replicate that sort of thing within Virtual Machine Manager? For the demo environment that we set up for TechEd North America and TechEd Europe for the Microsoft, the equivalent of the Microsoft Showcase, and that was all hosted within the System Center Virtual Machine Manager and with a private cloud for being able and with virtual machines that we could dynamically then deploy out with a base set of demo bits in it. So yeah, absolutely, you certainly can. Yes, yep, absolutely. Yep, for sure. So, and that's the beauty of being able to do sort of like the boot to VHD or boot to VHDX deployments. So, it solves a similar problem in a different way. It's not like it's not the same thing like VDI. Your resources are like you're using very little of the local resources, you know, like in a VDI environment. So therefore, the machine itself doesn't have to be able to do a lot. It depends on what you want to be able to achieve, I guess, is probably the answer. So yeah, so it's a similar problem with very different resolutions. So again, it would depend on what you're wanting to achieve as to which way would be better for you. So I'm not going to say that boot to VHD is going to be your solution in all cases. VDI is not going to be the solution in all cases either. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, again, like it's going to depend like on the environment. Like say, for instance, like a uni lab environment where you have, you know, like say, for instance, a bunch of machines you want to be able to kill off at the end of a class. Or you know daily, you know, like for the computer labs or something like that. That's when VDI might come into handy, or boot to VHD. again, two similar sort of solutions. The difference is what you deploy out to start off with. So we can have a chat about that later on if you like. So, yep. So the break-even point with any, and to be honest, it's with any of the system center tools, like sort of there becomes a point where if you have to replicate something enough times, or you have to do something, start doing something enough times, that's when the overarching management tools come in. So the for instance, if you're starting to go into having, I don't know like an exact sort of monetary figure or number of servers to be able to sort of say that's, if you've got 50 servers, then that's what you need. But effectively, if you need to spend like more than a couple of days at a time doing deployments of virtual boxes or like of host boxes, then being able to automate that process, if you look at it in the time taken to do the setup to start off with, and yeah, granted, there's a few steps involved with it. If you do that once as opposed to having to do that multiple times, and you then take that cost of the time that it took you to do it over a year period, a two-year period, however long the life of that environment is going to be, that's where your break-even point comes in. So, like, it's kind of how long's a piece of string sort of thing, and also it depends on the scale of your own environment as well. Like if you deploy virtual like a Hyper-V box and you've got sitting on three or four Hyper-V boxes and you've got 10 servers sitting on those, then Virtual Machine Manager may not necessarily be for you. But if you're doing that on a daily basis, then that's when the time taken might come in. There's a question at the back. No?
Free t-shirts.
There were free t-shirts. There was actually someone supposed to come and give me some free t-shirts, but they didn't come. So what I'll do is I'll grab those. If you want to come and find me tomorrow in the lab environment, I'll see what I can sort out. I don't know how many I'll have, so therefore it'll be first in, first served. Please make sure that you do fill out an eval, which is through your schedule builder. And don't forget to tweet, I want a ride in the WindSurf heli at AU TechEd COS to win a ride in a helicopter. So make sure you put the reason why you want it. So, all right. But thank you very much for attending, and as I said, come and see me anytime.